dollars are well spent to subsidize those students that are going outside until time, you know, that the state's population is sufficient to support it. Those are very difficult questions, and I'd say, in lieu of having some definitive answers to those, we ought to let it alone for the time being. That'd be my position.
Jumping back to student housing again, I appreciate you letting me ask you questions. President Barton stated last month that if we went total state funding on building these modular units here in Anchorage, we probably wouldn't have them until 85 or 86. I don't know if he gets his information from the Regents or from...
You wouldn't have the monies until then?
Yes. We wouldn't be able to build them until 85 and 86.
I do remember reading that in the student papers, and I was kind of concerned about that, too. And I, Mr. Furness and I were going to go up on Monday. When I waited to see him last Monday, but halfway up we had to fly back. At least we landed safely, but we never got up and we're going up to 7 and 9. I don't know what he meant by that, but I did take it in a negative sense, and I did take the whole article in a negative sense, in that here's an indication, for whatever reason or other, that the president was throwing up barriers to the students and to how soon you can have housing. Now, when we appropriate the budget, it is signed by the governor, and usually by July 1st of next year, that money is usable immediately, and especially with the university, because they get the money outright. With communities, it's a little different. The city of Anchorage or the Kenai Borough have to go through another process to get their monies, but the university has it immediately. They can already. That's why I went to put the $2.5 million in last year, so they can begin their preliminary plans of construction and ground preparation, and with my intent that would be done this summer. Then next year they added monies, go immediately into construction. There's another way in taking that, that maybe you would not have the building by 85, and with my optimism all the time, I thought that maybe he meant you could not move in before 85 academic year, which is probably reality.
Yeah.
Because it will take a good 18 months to do your ground preparation, and I don't think we need to spend 6 months on somebody coming up with a fantastic, beautiful architectural plan. I think all you want to set straight buildings that are all around the nation housing students now. The part I was concerned about is when he said that we must redo another study. For what? Now, he said we have a special group up here, average age is 28 to 29. We all know that. We've known that for years. But we know that it will dramatically drop as soon as there's dorms available for students, and will be equal to the Fairbanks campus in age, according to how many students we're able to house. Fairbanks right now, I think, houses about 1,600 students, and they say that they are in serious need of another dormitory to meet about 400 students. But I say we have zero, and we still have 2,500 students that have nothing.
I didn't read the article that the president had written or whatever, but if you consider funds appropriated, say, the 80, I guess, what are we, 82, 83?
It would be 84 budget.
Okay, the 84 budget.
July 1st.
By the time they go through the bid process, which normally takes several months, you're probably into the winter time, and then once those bids are called down, selected, whatever, you go through the design phase, and that normally takes, say, 3 to 4 months to do, and you look at the site preparation alone, especially in this bowl, oftentimes it's necessary to bring in 18 to 20 feet of fill of landfill in order to just get a stable pad to put that on. And you look at the construction period, a unit of this size, say 100 units, could possibly take 6 to 7 months. It would probably be 86 before the doors open on that project.
He stated that was state. If we went totally state, but if we went to private contractors, that would speed it up for some reason.
Well, the difference there is a private contractor normally does not have to go out to public bid. The private contractor normally does not have to go through the design and construct requirements. Now, chances are what they'll do is they'll come in with a proposal. This is the building we would propose to do, and it's sort of, you know, you've got everyone in one building that's doing all this, as opposed to a university system that's doing a lot of other things at the same time. You could fast-track the building, and they're doing a lot of fast-tracking now. I don't think it's saving the money by doing it that way. You take some time, perhaps, and perhaps the private sector, because of its ability to respond faster, could do it faster than that. I'm basing that upon my experience with the school system. It takes us, as I recall, 24 months upon receiving the funds in the Anchorage school system before a building is actually open. And that's on a fast-track proposal.
One more question. The Board of Regents stated that if we were going to build housing or any other type of buildings in the UAACC area, that we'd probably have to purchase land from Alaska Pacific University. And the Regents questioned that being a private university and we purchasing it with state money, we would in fact be supporting a private university with state money. I was wondering if you've explored that when you're looking into the student housing problem.
There's no more way of looking at that. It used to be legal for us to actually support the private institutions within Alaska because of the free choice of the students. And for all practical purposes, we're doing it now with our student loan program, even though questionably someone said you can't do it. And we're doing more than that in Sheldon Jackson University down in Sitka, too. So even though there was a change in interpretation of the law, in fact, we are doing it. As far as this buying of land from the university, and basically what's in mind is the land behind the hospital along Bagal, approximately 40 acres of land. We've already made a legislative commitment for 3 years that we will pay them $1 million a year for lease of that land, plus that could be used when we decide to buy it. I think in all practical purposes, most legislators knew what our intent was, that this was a sly way of buying the land outright. It doesn't matter who you buy the land from, to interpret it as supporting a religious institution. Well, today, number one, that is not a religious institution, it's a Pacific university, so that problem's out of the way. And even if it was, we could buy the land from John Dokes, who has 20 acres here, and him being a religious fanatic, gave all the money to the church of whatever. So therefore, somebody's going to bring a law. In other words, I think it's a little barrier that we don't even need to worry about.
Do you realize that this is one of the barriers that the Regents is using, and they're not directly behind?
Yeah. Well, one of the considerations, in 1971-72, the state of Alaska, through the Regents, paid $2 million to AMU at that time to go into the consortium agreement that built this library facility across the way here. So the precedent has already been set as far as channeling monies through AMU or APU. That land is designated as educational land. As I recall, there was a 20-year agreement to preserve that right as educational land. That agreement expired about 5 years ago. So I'm not sure as to where that sits, if it's still totally segregated land that cannot be used for anything other than educational use at this time. Terry, you may recall on that. But
this is the 40 acres we're talking about.
Well, all of the APU's property had a 20-year moratorium. It had to be used during that period of time for educational use, but that expired at the time that APU was reorganized. So it really, if they're using that as an argument, we have invested too much money into the campus up there to fall back on that. Now it's asinine to do so.
When you talk about politics, and we often hear that certain politicians want other politicians out of the business of the university, but they should keep heavily involved. And the Board of Regents like to use that too in the state administration. And by our constitution, they're exactly right. But when we appropriate the money, I just cannot blindly appropriate what they want each year, and especially where I'm very concerned what I think was misuse and that the students directly aren't benefiting. So politics goes up and down and in between, politics in your family, I'm sure, and there's certainly politics on the Board of Regents.
I've heard a few people say that perhaps taking a few classes, you're out here on campus a lot. I'm just wondering if there's any truth to that. That you're out on campus here so much, perhaps you're taking a few classes.
Oh, the biggest class.
We appreciate
to the students at lunchtime.
We appreciate the interest, really.
Thank you very much.
You don't have any questions for me.
Appreciate it.
I'm going to the other faculty meeting.
Yeah. Walt's going to another faculty meeting, but we can continue.
Walt?
David?
Yeah. I just need to talk to Walt first.
Can I talk?
Sure.
Okay. Good lively discussion. Good, good, good.
Be back. I'm going to be on for about 30 minutes.
Mark Cummings. Mark. There we go.
My name is Mark Cummings, and I'm a full-time ACC student. I'm also on the Instructional Advisory Council at ACC. And I'd like to say for the record that I don't enjoy riding people mover bus from my inadequate housing across town, and I'm not getting rich on financial aid. But those are not the topics that I care to talk about tonight. Okay. I have one point I'd like to make, and that is quality education. So many of our classes are being taught by part-time instructors of dubious quality in many different places around town, from Fort Richardson to Diamond High. And it is my opinion, and that of several of my associate students, that especially in the summertime, when most of the full-time faculty, who are basically highly regarded on this campus, are not working, and there's a high influx of part-time teachers who don't care as much as the full-time faculty and may or may not be as qualified for teaching classes. That's one point, the part-time teachers. The other point is it's not convenient for many students and completely impossible for others to travel all over town just to fill out their schedule. And many classes on campus are canceled, and some students are forced to go to Fort Rich or Elmendorf or even places like the Anchorage Fire Department Training Center to take a class. I don't believe that this represents quality education. I believe that the core classes that were brought across earlier, classes being closed and canceled before and during registration, as well as the funneling out of students to other facilities, such as Windler Junior High, which is very close, but you have to sit in the junior high school desk and look at the ABCs printed above the blackboard. I just don't believe that this represents quality education, and I think that even though housing and financial aid and all these other topics are very important, I think we should go back to the main reason. Why are we going to school? Why do I ride the people mover bus? Why do some people sleep in their cars and hitchhike? It's because they want an education, and they want a quality education, and they will put up with many inconveniences as long as they believe they are getting an education that will give them an edge in the job market when they get out. Thank you.
Good. Interesting point. We haven't heard that much about it yet today. Okay. The number one object, you know, of course, is housing and student loan to protect that. On the quality education bit, you say you're an instructor now?
No, I'm on the Instructional Advisory Council, which we advise the chancellor.
Yeah. Have you had a chance to talk this over with Dr. Biggerstaff and others and within the administration?
Unfortunately, I haven't talked to any administration people on that. I have talked to several students, though.
Uh-huh.
This is my third semester at ACC, and it's a topic that comes up repeatedly.
Yeah. The main thing is, I guess I stick my nose more than in the average legislators into things that aren't supposed to be our business, supposedly, because they want to keep politics out of the higher education. However, I feel we're paying a tremendous bill, and if people like you and the other students feel that you're not getting what for your money's worth, then we have to be responsible and say, you know, what are you doing in the education field? What is your kind of a schedule? Do you find yourself shipping around? Well, number one, what year are you into?
I'm a sophomore.
Sophomore, and what degree program are you looking for?
English.
English?
English, correct. One uses that as a basis to go on to a higher education later.
Uh-huh. Now, from that point on, how many credits a week are you making? And could you give us an idea of how you have to be shipped around?
Okay. Myself, I refuse to go off campus, partly mm-hmm. because I have a work-study job. I work in the mornings here in the campus center and go to school afternoons and evenings. And since I sold my vehicle in order to have enough money to go to school this semester, I can't be spending 2 or 3 hours a day on the people mover going elsewhere for classes. So I was severely limited, well, not severely would be a bad word, but somewhat limited to what I could take because of the not only my name being on the bottom of the priority for registration, but because of classes filling up and canceling on campus, and then the tendency just to reschedule a class if you don't have a classroom on campus, say Diamond High or Service or some other place, and expect everybody to have their own car and can afford to go out there 3 or 4 times a week mm-hmm. and brave the traffic and whatever else is involved.
The problem with instructors is that as far as ACC campus and the nearby facilities, they favor the full-time faculty here and the part-time faculty gets into the satellite campus. Is that a...
Most students prefer full-time faculty.
And they are stationed here at ACC
facilities? Generally speaking, yes. The biggest problem with the part-time faculty is summers, when most of the full-time faculty are off. Mm-hmm. And I understand there's been a problem with the budgeting and with the bargaining unit on that. So if a student would rather, instead of taking the fall and spring schedule of classes, would maybe be better off because of their work schedule or their family or whatever, go summer, fall, they find that they feel they have inadequate instructors in the summer and inadequate facilities. Because a part of the campus is closed, and it's a part-time instructor who has maybe never taught this class before, maybe once or twice, and they may be going fishing on the weekends, whereas a full-time instructor normally gives you their home phone. They can tell you many where they can be contacted during the week, and I've even contacted instructors on Sunday afternoons and had no problem. But with a part-time instructor, you really never know where to catch them. They don't have an office on campus. Many times they will not give you a phone number.
I think you hit on part of the problem that's come up with a little bit this morning as far as the different campuses, the university versus community college, which means freedom, as the academic professors on the university said, we're free in doing our thing, and the union instructor feels that they aren't so free, although that's the only way they can get the fair salaries that they want. The major problem there is the union, which we can't do too much about with the bargaining agreement that's going on, except that if the institution here had a problem meeting its budget because of its own union problems, and he can't rotate those instructors like UAA can rotate his instructors to cover all three semesters, and Fairbanks has the same problem. The university up there can rotate their instructors at the university, but the guy at TVCC cannot because of union priorities or agreements. So I'm afraid at the community college level anyway, it seems like you're going to be stuck with the temporary part-time, unless they solve their own problem some way.
I don't fully understand the problem, but does it cost more to hire a union instructor than it does
That's part of the problem that came out with some of the professional instructors now. It's a very serious problem, and part of it is a serious problem of accreditation and a serious problem of transferring your credits from one institution to another. Who's teaching it? And a lot of students have been burned in the past. It's not as bad now, but it could be in the part-time instructor problem that you're talking about. If X person was not qualified in the first place to teach that subject, then can you carry that credit to the next course?
Well, if they weren't qualified, you shouldn't have taken the class in the first place,
right?
Because that's why you took
it. But even last year, we found a lot of students that got burned because the counselors told them to do this or do that, and they followed the counselors and found that was the wrong instructions they were given. So you bring up a very serious problem. I also express it, every chance I get, that it needs to be cleaned up. But I think the number one way, and I know some students are getting frustrated with the administration not listening, but perseverance, keep trying.
You have to keep trying. You have to get involved and do your best.
Don't give up. And I know it's awful hard for the students to do because you got to pay a school in the first place. Mm-hmm. And if you don't pay a school, it's not worth it. But taking on these other advocacies that don't necessarily help you, but hopefully to help other generations, to me it's really appreciated that the students take the time and do it. But at the same time, I know it's frustrating. Forget our man here. Biggerstaff talked a little bit about the problem this morning, and then one of the other instructors for the faculty, the teachers, brought up the problems too they had, and the number of hours and instructions they're allowed and so on.
Well, like you're saying, as far as looking forward to the future generations and future students, as well as housing and other problems that should be ironed out, the problem of having a full-time summer semester equal in weight to the other three,
mm-hmm.
should also be considered along with the other problems.
I don't do my part to get into it.
Okay. Yeah, well, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much for bringing this information. Appreciate it, Mike. Jim Donnelly. Okay. Charmaine Ramos. Sure, go ahead.
Hello, I'm Charmaine Ramos. I'm the current president for Alaska Native American Indian Student Organization, and that involves ACC, mainly U of A and APU at this time. And I'm also a volunteer at the SOS office. That's the Student Orientation Service. That's with ACC campus. Do you know of them or heard of them?
Yes, I know where your office is.
Okay. Then,
there's some students over there.
Okay. At this time, that's our biggest problem is housing. It's commonly known that in Anchorage there is a housing problem, and I believe it's to be worse for a student because they're not recognized as a mature and responsible adult. And second of all, they do have a limited budget. I know of a number of students that haven't returned this year. I'm a junior at this time, and I've been a student at ACC campus for 3 years now. And I do know of a number of students that have not returned because of the housing crisis. The rent has increased, and they cannot, especially a family-oriented student, cannot keep up with the rising cost. This semester, there's only 3 weeks left, 2 weeks of classes itself, and there's 1 week of finals. And we just had a student leave on Friday because of the housing problem. He moved about 4 or 5 times within 6 weeks. part of the problem was the rental cost increase. And then also a transportation problem. SOS put out a pamphlet on guidelines for new students, and it says what to look for in apartments, location and transportation and price range. And one of the recommendations they asked the students is to be within walking distance of a bus stop or within walking distance of ACC. And then also another guideline for them was whether the apartment should be furnished or not. And another important deal was deposits and monthly rents. Deposits have been high for Native students. If the semester just to register is about $300-$400 plus your books is another $100, then you have your deposit, which is usually about $200 or $300, and then you have your first couple of months, which you're talking about for a student for their first month of schooling is at least $1,000. And for myself, that's half of my grant for this year. And I did not receive that until end of September, and that's another problem. Is that if you do qualify for grants, they're not always available when school first starts. I had to use my own funding to register for my tuition. And I did qualify for a student loan, but that didn't come through until the middle or nearly the end of September. So that is another problem. Also, with weather like this, on Monday and Wednesdays, I have a 9 o'clock class. And the bus that's closest for me to be on in time has been 30 minutes late. So I've been late for my class. So that is another problem is transportation if you do not live near the campus. And what I would like to see, or I'm supporting, is a dormitory setting because I've been involved or lived in a dormitory situation, both at SJ campus and their sister school in Spokane, Washington, Whitworth College, and also I've lived in Fairbanks for a summer, going to their Native studies there. And I believe that should be strongest because of that tighter networking system. The students are able to study together, relax together. If there's a lounge, they can sit around and get to know each other. There's that regional information. I've learned about different regions within Alaska that I probably could not afford to visit. And also, if I was having a hard time with one of my studies, there's some sort of networking where I could always fall back on another student. So I do support a dormitory setting. Also, I do agree with some of the students that have testified before that students are now younger. We, at SOS, we have seen students that are only 17 years old, and they come straight into the college setting here in Anchorage. They are from a rural area. They do not know very much about deposits or monthly rents, leases. Some of them sign a lease and not knowing that it's a six-month lease or a year lease, and when they try to move out, they're hit with this. Or do they not really realize that they do have to give a 30-day notice? And also another important factor is that many students are, especially rural students, are becoming aware that education is required in today's society, and many of these students are family-oriented, and many apartments do not allow children, so we should keep them in mind. And also another, the School of Specialties is what I call it, where you had Juneau as the government, and Fairbanks is for lawyers or what have you. I sort of agree with this, but I think it should be up to the students to what area would have something to offer. Like, I would like to go into Native Studies, but that is in Fairbanks at this time, and I personally do not want to move to Fairbanks. I would rather stay in Anchorage here, where I have my family to support me when I'm having a hard time. So if there is like a School of Specialties, each region has a School of Specialties, then I believe that students should have more say in this. Right now they're trying to move the nursing schooling to Fairbanks, where it's been based here, and there are many students dropping out of nursing because they do not want to move to Fairbanks. At this time, I did have more students here earlier. I had some of my board of directors from the Alaska Native American Indian Student Organization. At this time, I only have Paul Littlesheep, and he's the board of directors for the Native Student Organization, and also Hugh Harris, and he's one of my board of directors, and he's the chairman of our entertainment committee, which I believe is strongly needed, because in the 3 years that I've been here, this is one of the worst years in spirit. There's a lack of spirits. I'm not quite sure. I haven't pinpointed exactly what the problem is, but students do not seem to link together and try to work together. We can't even have people come over. We're having a hard time gathering the kids, students together to participate in some of our club activities, but we're working on it.
Well, thank you for your report, Charmaine. I was wondering if your group, SOS, or any of the other students here, it seems like another point that maybe, I think it's missing, maybe you are doing something, but is anyone working with Dr. Bickerstaff or with the administration and already now doing preliminary work and saying what we want in student housing, what we expect? There's no doubt been an agreement with Dr. Bickerstaff and Dr. Alcott of UAA, and wholeheartedly I would not want one campus or the other have priorities over who gets housing. Who gets housing should be according to, you know, who's traveling the furthest in the first place, what grade level you're in, perhaps, and how many credit courses you're taking. A person that's taking 9 credit per semester don't need a house nearby as much as one that's taking 16 credits, because obviously he's going to be walking back and forth, is she. But is there any attempt with anybody working with the administration, I think starting now, I'm saying what we want? Yes, ma'am.
I'm Carol. I'm coordinator of student activities for ACC, and the University of Alaska Anchorage does have a housing committee that met, I believe, for the first time this morning, the first or second time. Oh, now, there are no ACC representatives on that committee that I know of at this time, but they are dealing with priorities and concerns over who will get priority in the student housing. I'm afraid I'm not on the committee, so I do not have any more information.
Yeah. Well, would the various student groups have access to that committee and be able to express themselves?
I am providing input to Dr. Bickerstaff that I believe students would like to be on that committee for the ACC.
Right now, it's an input situation. It's not a fact of.
No, we do not have an ACC committee at this time.
Yes, Karen.
I would like to state a fact. At this time, Alaska Natives are getting together, and we're calling it the task force. At this, we're solidifying at this time and formulating, and I have assigned one of my board of directors to participate in that, and they meet every Friday. Elaine Abraham of the SOS office would know much more than I on it, of the task force, and they are trying to work with the housing problems, and they have just assigned a new chairman of the task force for Alaska Natives, and they are setting up meetings with both ACC and U of A at this time.
I think now is a real good time to start that, because I feel very optimistic that as much as we're doing in all angles, getting that money appropriated one way or the other, that one angle we really haven't hit hard is for some of the students to directly call Governor Lex Sheffield, and if he would put it in the governor's budget, $15 million, that would solve a major problem in anticipating. See, once we're out of session, if he redlines it, we're shot for another year. And, of course, Governor Hammond did that to us this past year, which we really, really didn't expect, and I still don't know why he ever did it, but, you know, it can happen. Another reason why I ask for student involvement now is that last year, a couple of legislators, we were trying to second-guess more than anything else what the students wanted, and we did advocate that the student dorms would be co-ed, because evidently from some of our narrow-minded thinking is what they wanted. And quickly, the ladies of the university said, absolutely no, they want separate wings or separate dorms. So I've learned from that little trick, get my 2 cents worth out, and let the students express themselves if they will somehow ever get into it to begin at the ground level. Yeah.
Did anyone else, Bonnie, have any questions? No?
I think, one other problem I did have with SOS, and I do have some student friends over there, known years ago when they were young in Boys Club, and outside of student loans, what other aids are being sought? I do know that the from the Western leadership leaders, the people I know, Representative Al Adams, Senator Ferguson, and so on, and Representative Fuller, and guy from Quitlock, all are very supportive that Anchorage should be the major campus for Native Alaskans for various reasons. But I was surprised to hear that in the last 2 years that they would rather, and they were shooting for it. Senator Ferguson was very much trying to help us with student housing, mainly because he knew of the Native problem coming into town. So maybe that's another angle to help to make sure that we would have royal legislators with us on this housing. And but I, as I mentioned before, I think our worst enemies for the Anchorage campuses have been Anchorage legislators, not the outside legislators. But what other way do you have here? Cook Inlet Native Association, are they helping? I've at times sent students over to the office on Fireweed Lane, and sometimes I have a feeling that they're not being helped.
We're formulating right now because of the Reaganomic cuts. Many staff have been cut from, like, CINA. CINA, we've met with them within the last month. We've been meeting with them more regularly because their staff has been cut. And so ACC, I volunteered my time at ACC, and through SEC and their coordinator, Elaine Abraham, we've met with them, and we're going to try to work together. And they did confess that they feel like they haven't been doing their job as best as they thought they could, and the reason why is because of the budget cuts. Mm-hmm. And so what we're trying to do now is, instead of two people doing one job and another job being left completely untouched or problem, what they'll do is start coordinating together and working together to solve as many areas as student problems mm-hmm. as possible. Right. And we have been meeting, like I said, about a month now.
Is there
because
a potential
if they students slip through our fingers and not knowing why, we decided to get together.
They have a lot of programs. They used to be very active, but maybe you're right with federal cuts. Maybe they had a lot of counselors over there, and often thought that they could solve many problems of housing for our native visitors, and also some of the financial problems that they have.
We don't have the housing monies anymore because of the budget cuts. It was all federal funds
all federal,
that they were working with, and they have lost all of their social services, and now it's completely been transferred to the state and municipality social services. So CINA does not have that agency anymore.
I see. Is it, was this under the BIA program?
Yes.
Because I'm working with Representative Adams now that we're going to try to fully fund that on supplemental appropriation. But I didn't know if it's extended to the university.
Educational funds have been cut 25%. That's the scholarship grants.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not placed back into the federal budget at all. The employment assistant that took care of all the vocational training, that's your auto, diesel, welding, in those areas, that was cut 50%, and that has not been replaced. So from 385 students of 1981, we went down to 299 students this year. That's Alaska Natives that are attending Anchorage Community College.
Mm-hmm.
But there is another gear up to try to meet those areas, and where the Alaska Natives did not utilize the student loan previously, there will be more Alaska Natives utilizing the Alaska loan than ever before.
Good.
Where in 1980 and 81 we did not fill out not one Alaska loan, we are filling them out now for almost all of our students, so hopefully we'll get back to that 385 that we had in 1980 and 81.
Yeah.
Today we have 299 Alaska Native students and 17 American Indians. We have a total of 318 Alaska Native American Indian students at ACC.
Yeah, I was in, last year was wondering why y'all never did that. I thought I knew partially that you just want to prove on yourself that you could try to meet the burden. But, you know, if it's there, I often thought, well, why not use it? So you're going to make use of it this year. You know. Thank you very much. Charmaine, you have any more?
No, I do not.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Paul Little Fish?
I'm Paul Little Chief, Chairman of the Board for the Alaska Native American Indian Student Organization. I'm a full-time student at ACC, also a student at Alaska Native Training Institute. My two main concerns with the housing and the student loan, primarily housing, is I don't know all that much about the student loan program because I'm fairly new to Alaska this trip. I'm not under the state loan because I didn't qualify for it. I think it's a very needed program, but how are you going to work out these crinks in it? I don't know. You know, it's going to take a lot of work on your part. I know. I don't envy you a bit. That, well, I'm not going to, I had a prepared thing here, but after listening to everybody, I pretty well took care of it. Some facts and figures here that Elaine had just spoke on. The projected outlook for 83 is 360. And if we have a total of 18, we have a total of 17 that dropped out from September to now. And if that's just for 299 students that are native, how many others have dropped out that are not native because of the housing situation? You know, that's a lot of students going to be dropping out from because of the lack of housing. Like some, if you apply in March for your state student loan, you probably get your promissory note in August 31st. Receive your funds later, last of September. Now, a lot of students come into SOS where I'm peer counselor, and they won't have no bucks at all, and they'll say, hey, I applied for student loan, and they said I'm going to get it, and here they are at your door, and they ain't got no money, and we have no funds to get them into school. You know, and the school says that you have to have the money to get into school before they give you the bucks. So a lot of them, we lost a couple I had, and we gained some from Fairbanks because of the housing situation up there. And you know, the students here are crying for some of the subjects that are being taught at Fairbanks, and that's Native Studies. Like myself, being from the Lower 48, I'm taking Anthropology College up here. And there's a lot of, I've had misconceptions about some of the things that went on up here, you know. And I'm sure that people from up here have misconceptions about my type of people. But in the office, and in sharing these experiences with the students, we get to know each other better. And if this thing goes on in a little bitty office that we have over there, I think it would go on in a dormitory situation where you have a lounge. You know, students coming in from the rural area facing cultural shock. You know, they can sit in a dormitory situation in a lounge and talk to other students that are from natives and share things together that they've shared in the village, and that is giving and taking. I mean, giving, sharing and giving. You know, and their value system from the village is different than the value system here. Theirs is giving and sharing. And they come into this dominant society that takes and keeps. You know, it is a total shock to them. Because I know, I experienced it when I was young. I went through it. And I still believe traditional. Because I was raised traditional. I do everything that I do is traditional. I pray, all these things. And I know what they face when they come into these things. They don't even know what a pedestrian is. Because there ain't no cars out there. And they say, look how dumb he is. He don't even know what a pedestrian is. It's these kind of things that they face that are basic and simple to us. That they don't have no, they don't know, they don't understand it. They don't know how to catch a bus. And I'm sure they've made wonderful students, wonderful leaders for our people. And these are a lot of things that we face in trying to solve these things at SOS. And being new to Alaska, I don't know all the traditional ways that they do up here. So I just go by the way I was taught, by my elders. And that is respect. Show respect to everybody. Let him speak his peace. Then stand up and speak. Respect him for what he is, for what he stands for. This, let him be him. Let him be himself. Know who he is. And a lot of them come in, don't know who they are because of the way they've been taught. Now they want to be traditional, but yet they're taught to be in a dominant society, so they're caught in a limbo situation. So when they come here, there's no dormitory, so they go downtown to a housing situation. They run into drugs and alcohol. This is where we lose them too. Now there's so much that the native student faces that when he comes to Anchorage or any town where there's a college, that the ones, I have to applaud the ones that make it through. Because they face, I'd say, 80% more difficulty than a dominant society student does. But yet they're ridiculed, they're made fun of when they come here because he can't talk English very well. He makes certain mistakes in his English. These kind of things. And it's, I see it. a few years ago, I kind of got angry, but I went back to my traditions. I just have to say, I pray for you, my brother, the person that's making fun of my other brother, you know. And I pray, I meditate every day for these people, you know, say, hey, let's get back together as one, be in tune with Mother Nature. All our universities should be like Mother Nature's university out there. You know, it's in tune, it's one. It's with Mother Earth, the universe, grandfather. These kind of things, if we show respect to each other, we have no problem. But it's all this, it's what my elder says, the green frog skin, they're all chasing the green frog skin. That buck, trying to reach for him, he jumps. They're constantly chasing that green frog skin instead of showing respect to each other. But getting off the track here.
That's all right. We all need a little education at times.
You know, I was reading somewhere where Texas, their budget, they budget somewhere in 30% of their money to education. And Alaska is less than 10%. I can't. Well, I guess I can kind of see why, in a sense, but not that much difference in 30s and 10. I really can't see that. Then maybe it's all these monies that everybody keeps, these figures that keep coming up, I can't really understand it, but I'm starting to kind of grasp it with listening to the three of you talk this afternoon, fine, it'd be nice to have that bucks brought in here, but like the other representative said, the system wouldn't be able to handle it. In Anti, I go full-time here and I go night school at Anti. So in January I have a total of 39 credits. So I'm carrying 39 credits when you're only supposed to carry 18. I mean, 26 credits I have instead of only 18. But in Anti, they're facing the same problem. It was geared for the Native and the Indian to be alcoholic and drug counselors. And it came in that some people wanted college credits for it. So instead of keeping it geared for the Native and the Indian, they geared it to college level, which is 100, 200, 300 level schooling. Excuse me. Some of these coming in, they're only fifth and sixth graders. And there's no way in heck that they can compete on that kind of level. So they're dropping out. And then in my class, I think out of 19 started, I think there's only seven, and only three of us are Native. And it's the dropout rate is staggering. It's like I kind of have a hard time sometimes in some of them classes, but then in a couple others they told me I should be teaching them. But it's that the Natives that are having trouble there, they come to me and ask me, what does this really mean? What was he saying? Because see, they show the respect to that person by not interrupting him and not making him repeat things that they say, I show that much respect to him and saying, hey, I'm grasping it. But then they'll come and I'll say, hey, well, this is the way I perceive that he's trying to say. Then I go back to the instructor. Is this what I hear you saying? And sometimes he'll say no and repeat it. Other times he'll say yes. And I go back and say, yes, this is what he was trying to say. So I think a lot of it goes on here too. I've talked to a couple of students, and one girl I talked to, she said, I haven't even understood one single word he said. And that was too late to drop classes. She sat all through this fall semester, not understanding one single word that he said. And this is where we're failing somewhere along the line. We're not catching them as we're coming in the right time or something. And I really don't know where to get a hold of them. I guess as soon as we sign them up, we've got to keep better track of them. But we're understaffed. Our counseling department, it's the drug and alcohol problems that they come to us with. We say, hey, I got class, I can't see right now, or something like that. And you try to refer them to another organization. They don't know what I'm talking about. They can't understand me. And then if we try to do counseling, there's counselors out there that say, hey, what are they trying to do? They're not certified counselors. And it's this professionalism that keeps getting in there. And the only ones they can relate to is the other Native student. So we try to talk to them. And they say, wow, they got counselors there. Huh? They're so stupid, they only go to counselors. But they don't understand the two-value system that's there. I can relate to how they feel, because I've been there, and I'm still there, and I'll always be there. A lot of them don't understand that the English word has sometimes 15 different meanings. And when they say something, that person literally takes them for what they're saying. Being that I've been there, I know what they're trying to say. Because in my language, there's 15 or 20 different ways of saying a certain word, depending on who you're talking to, what you're talking about, what time of the day it is, whether it's sacred or whether it isn't, these kind of things. And to try to explain this in English is impossible. I'm for the dormitory setting. I think this would help our students a lot more than now, because now we're losing them. And I think with a dormitory setting, with the giving and sharing with all our brothers and sisters, We can learn from this. And it's, you know, when I came up here, they said there's a U of A, UAA, and Anchorage Community College, and APU all in one place. I figured it was going to be a big dormitory complex. Nothing. Out here. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd think so, yeah.
But no. You know, it's like when I went to Montana School of Mines in Butte, Montana. You know, they, but I stayed away from college. I had to work part-time. So I stayed at this ranch, went up to college at 5 o'clock in the morning, driving to Butte. And then get out of class at 6, drive all the way back out to the ranch, melt the cows, go to bed, or study for a while. But they had a dormitory there. I finally had to go to the dorm because my grades were dropping below B. So I had to go back to the dorm in order to study. And there, I see where if you didn't understand a problem, there was always somebody in there that in the lounge that did. And they'd sit down and help you. You shared doing homework together. You learned, seemed like we learned more that way. It's one thing is at the School of Mines, sometimes 100 students in a class, you know, and he couldn't help you individually. So that's how we took care of it, was in the dorm, by helping each other. I think that's all I have to say.
Yeah, very good, Paul. I have a few responses. Number one, I very much believe in dorms, but I also can conceive them, and that's the control property as being a mixed blessing. I do remember going up last year to Fairbanks, and evidently there were still problems of what they call prejudice treatments. So we had to be very careful about that. And I did talk to the student senate of UAA last year and asked them that, you know, we'd better be very cognizant of that with our Native brothers before we even begin, and make sure that we do some prevention work before we find ourselves in problems. But then also know that depending on what kind of leadership we have in the dorms, like if we have dorm presidents, dorm counselors, and so on, those are very important people, whether they be fellow students or what, to monitor the activities. Or you might have one wing ended up being an alcoholic wing and another wing of all geniuses. And also the problem that I do believe that the SOS students and those who travel the furthest should be given a certain priority, but at the same time, that may be detrimental into mixing with the community of people that live within the community. So it should be a mixture of people, and somehow in your student meeting with the administration, all these factors are taken into consideration. Because here again, even though an Anchorage student may live out in Turnagain, he still has 6 to 8 miles a day to drive in and has the bus problems and everything else. And he still wants to very much be a part of the campus. He don't want to have to be forced just to go back home and see mom and daddy tonight. He is suddenly, or she is suddenly developing into independence and maturity. And part of that is the campus life that hopefully that dorms will bring. One of your problems, well, number one, on the part of the 10-30% budget, we hear this a lot about budget, and certainly that has swung 2 years ago, that some wise student or faculty member can suddenly say, especially in 1980, the first year we have big oil revenues coming in, look how cheap you guys are, look how little you're giving us now, compare yourself to Texas. Well, Texas doesn't have the money we got rolling in. And also the people did demand that 25% of our revenues will go into the permanent fund. And I'll fight to death for that one, because that's the only way you can plan for the future generations and get anything out of this oil wealth. And so that's 25% that you shouldn't even consider. I had a guy called up the other day, and it was really outrageous that we blew $3 million last year. I read in the paper you guys spent every cent we gave you. Well, that's the way it has to be. We didn't spend it all. I said we appropriated it. That $1.8 billion of that did go into a permanent fund, so it's not blowing it. You got rid of it. We don't have it. Well, it's the way how you conceive it. And, you know, so 10% versus 30, we spent $265 million last year on post-secondary education students. That $265 million spent on approximately 18,000 bodies. That's an outrageous sum. Sure, someone said, well, Texas spent 30% of their budget. What budget do they have? It's much lower than ours. Per person, they spend a lot less. We spend the highest amount throughout the nation per student for post-secondary education. And are you getting your money's worth is the question, you know. is the state getting its money's worth? It's not a percentage game only. For the problem with students making it a failing in college, and especially our native students, there's been some really serious talks about that with legislators and how we can solve the problem. And the administration, I know, is really trying to solve the problem. And one of the things that I've been working with Al Adams, Representative Adam and Senator Ferguson on, is to buy Mount Edgecombe from the federal government. Let's put $4 million into that. And instead of all of our loyal students going there first come, first serve, I would like to see that as a preparatory type of schools. For those students, now that our Molly Hoosh Act proved itself in the sense that we can decentralize our junior high and high school students, and the students don't have to travel as far to at least get secondary education, but then make it competitive. Instead of whoever puts down the Mount Edgecombe first and they're on a waiting list, make them competitive. Those students you know who are going to have the best chances of making it to college or universities, maybe the last 2 years of high school should be out Mount Edgecombe. Expand it now, it's about 300 students. I wouldn't mind expanding that to 700 students, that's how many can handle. If we upgrade the dormitories they have there and facilities, we could have 700 students. Those would be 700 students from our rural areas that are going right into higher education, and therefore the problems that you experienced, that you're suddenly into a new realm from your village life. Maybe this transitional period in a preparatory school would help them be more successful in the college, whether it be Fairbanks or Anchorage or June or wherever, or Southern 48. So there are people giving serious consideration to it. There's probably many answers. As far as understanding your college instructors, and even though I'm white, I have the same problem too. I remember going through college courses throughout the whole term and wondering what the individual said. Some professors just talk above the heads of all the students, you know, and you're just lucky you make it through class, you know. Well, thank you very much for expressing yourself. I just appreciate it. Anyone have any questions for Paul? Right. Thank you, Paul. Earl Polk.
Earl Polk had to go to class.
Oh, okay.
He was here. He is with the same students.
All right. And then Evelyn?
Evelyn Strauss also had to go to class. Right. They are both gone.
I think, Elaine, we've gotten to you now.
I was not listed to testify.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. You don't have to unless you want to. Okay.
I would like to ask.
You're most welcome.
Our understanding was, I know that Representative Miller and Chair Miller both would be here, Walt Furness, and a representative from Tisch,
May Tisch.
Yes. Who is representing her here? No?
I don't think she sent anyone today.
Who sent?
Who does?
May Tisch.
I thought she was going to be here today, too.
Yeah, I did too.
It was my understanding that she would be.
My question is, who is being represented besides Wald and Terry and Representative Miller?
My name is Bonnie Kudnowski, and I'm an aide to Senator Vic Fisher.
Vic Fisher. Okay.
And he's out of state, and he asked that someone from his staff come to these meetings.
Earlier today, a representative from Joe Josephson's office is here. She had to leave at about 3. She had a doctor's appointment.
Right. Senator Josephson called me Saturday and said he suddenly had to go to Oregon. And we knew that Senator Fisher was going to be out of state, so his representative came.
In answer to the support from the legislatures, the rural Bush legislatures on dormitories, we have support from Al Adams, Seth, Pat Ferguson, and Bascom, and Vic Fisher. You know, 100% behind the dormitories. And in answer to ACC's involvement in the housing committee, Bickerstaff had said that the University of Alaska Anchorage would take the forward push on housing, and they would have a slot for ACC students, and he did not want to, you know, be the one to. And I think that's the reason why ACC is not involved. But when you come down to numbers, I think it's Anchorage Community College students that need that dorms. When you really come down to numbers, because of the vocational programs that Anchorage Community College offers, they offer, in many cases, the only course in the state of Alaska in vocational technologies. Food technology accrediting is one good example. Anchorage Community College is the only one that offers that. So you do and will begin and will continue to attract students from all over the state because mm-hmm. of the great many degree programs ACC offers in vocational technology. I just don't agree that UAA should be the one that's completely responsible. I think that ACC should be responsible, and I think the students should be invited to participate in planning for the future, you know, for 1985-86, and at that time I'm going to be retiring. I'll be 55. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll be retiring, and it's their, you know, that's their problem. The future of us, it's their problem, and I think they should be invited to participate. And I'm glad I came because I will be more active in representing our students and to the administration and saying to Dr. Bickerstaff, I think you should invite ACC students to talk to them so that they could be, they could participate in planning for the future. And I really appreciate, I wasn't going to come, but my students wanted to come. And
I'm glad you did.
Your time, and I'm glad that you were here to hear their concerns.
Well, I needed to know more about SOS because I vaguely knew where your office was, and I had a couple of students, mainly from my prior years and working with youth, that were having problems, and we had to work with them more. But on this, I don't know what the protocols between ACC and UAA are, and it's always, to me, been a mystery that they can't work up in unity. But somehow ever, I'm like a bull in a china closet, that if I don't know something, I play dumb and ignorant and just hop right in and do it. And somehow ever, if you can take a direct approach, I mean, you're number one, we do have a hierarchy and you do have Dr. Bickerstaff that should be working for you, but at the same time, he has so many problems on his hands that, I don't know, if I was a student at ACC, I wouldn't have any qualms about not going directly over to Dr. Barton's office and say, hey, I'm Joe Schmo, whoever, and I want to get in on this. I don't know how far you get, but at least try. Then another problem I find lacking, and the gentleman told me that he'd be more than glad to do something, and we overlook our own local papers. Mr. Atwood from Anchorage Times stopped me the other day and asked me, you know, how far we think we're going to get on student housing. He said, what guarantee you have on the governor not zapping again? And I said, I don't have any guarantees. There's two major approaches. I do think we need local public media support to emphasize the problems that the students are having. And there's no doubt in my mind there, now I have to talk to Mr. Atwood, if you would give him a call and let him know that some of the students would like to talk to him and really get him to support through an editorial, through whatever means, the communication system he has to advocate the serious problem of student housing. And I think it's been minimal in the way it's been handled nowadays. And also, the advocacy you have with the legislators, as I mentioned before, at the hearings all day, the greatest enemy of UAA and ACC, in my mind, has not been the out-of-city legislators, been the Anchorage legislators trading off the needs of ACC and UAA for other pet projects. And I think we've come to an end where we've got to stop that, where a few people will call them personally and just put them on the line. I've asked some students the other day that, you know, have guts enough to ask some of these legislators, would they be willing not to even sign a budget this year if it does not have $15 million in for student housing to begin with? So, and then if y'all can work on Governor Sheffield's angle. You know, the governor could save us an awful amount of problems by, in his budget. See, we have the university budget before us now. That's number one system. Then the second thing that happens right after the sessions take place, the governor will make a joint appearance before the Senate and the House, and then he presents his budget. Now his budget is be considerably different or slightly different from the various 11 departments, whether it be the environmental department, whether it be the health department or the UAA. He's added some, he's subtracted some, and so on. Here again, if you can convince him to put $15 million in, which would be equal to what the other two campuses are wanting this year. That would be a significant hurdle overcoming. We know then that we don't have to wait at the last minute after we're out of session, then he redlines it or blesses it. So
So there's a lot of angles that we can work this out together as, and I know I'm very committed to it. I see the problems.
I have a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
From sitting here and listening this morning, faculty and administration all gave their testimony. And my impression is that their number one priority is this administration building.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listening from the students, every single student that has testified has said that housing is their number one, except for one person who talked about the quality of education.
Yes.
I think it's important that the students and administration really communicate their priorities, the housing versus the administration building. I think it's important that the administration realize that housing is, you know, the students' main concern, and that when the budget, the university budget, is being looked at, that it's given up right up there, that, you know, high priority.
Yeah, it's very true, Bonnie, and after listening, being on this committee for 3 years, I have to admit that I feel that the administration had been using the students, and I know the students do not have part a full time to pursue what they feel, and the students evidently have expressed it. So to the point, at least they gave in to $5 million this year, but we don't even know how that $5 million is going to be used. I'm really questioning.
You mean they stipulated $5
million for? Campus housing. It doesn't say student housing for Anchorage. It says student housing for Juneau and student housing for Fairbanks. But ironically, for here, it's known as campus housing, and they're more concerned about families. And that's why the one gentleman was more or less saying faculty housing, and I have heard those rumors before, that this is another way they're going to get professors from the 748s to come up by offering them. And it really, since more people have spoken on that in the last couple of weeks, worries me. Who's kidding who here?
I just hear two different groups speaking, and of course the administration has a little bit.
I think the students, and it's definitely going to have to be a big burden on David's part, because the faculty always say, and the administration always say, well, the students knew what our budget was. The student agrees that we need to get into the batter's box first before we get to first base. But they've been saying that for 5-6 years. If you look over the last 3 chancellors we've had, and look at their grandiose plans that they have. You see, you know, it's just been battered back and forth. And 10 years ago, the Board of Regents and the administration of Alaska Housing drew up the diagrams and programs for student housing here in Anchorage.
10 years ago,
I had those initial diagrams and reports, but they keep on saying, well, the Board of Regents has changed. No kidding. How many times are you going to wait for the Board of Regents to change? Yeah, it's been frustrating for him. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, also they have the same thing. They have parking garages built on the campus. Do you feel they'll be getting support for multi-story parking units?
Well, here's the conflict that we have. You know, when they're talking about $20,000 per car, and we know that other people who dare to think differently said that, you know, we can get rid of about 600 cars a day in this Anchorage area if you provide the housing. We literally force students to drive in and out 2 and 3 times a day, not just once. They drive in for morning classes, drive out to go home, drive back in for evening classes, drive out for dinner. And one guy, I mentioned this morning, we had to call him, he's supposed to be here, from the municipality, said that he's going to bring in a major complaint that they have about the university area here. And he said he knows it's going to be, you know, deadly for him. But they are worried about the federal regulations according to the air quality. And if we don't do something about student housing, he said it's going to be shocking if we close down the whole transportation system in this area, because it is very bad around the university. That came out of the blue of the sky for me. I've never met the fellow before.
Other question I might have, that they don't seem very interested on building the facilities for housing. Do you think there will be any possibility of getting a subsidy for the students? In relationship to the exorbitant amounts of rent?
They have talked about that, and that's where some private entities said, hey, you don't need any state money for building student housing. We will build them at sites nearby the campus, and we will have them available for the students if you subsidize us. So at one Board of Regents member said that is absolutely ridiculous, because what they would have is a monopoly. you have a private business that will have a full-time monopoly over the students in this area, because they're the only ones that will have housing available for students, and we will be forced into subsidizing that private business. It won't be subsidizing the students. If we pay out $15 million outright in cash, get your 300 units built, 600 students you handle, let the students and or private organization cater it, and the students can help with their own maintenance in the cafeterias and cleanup and stuff like that, but have the private organization cater it, where we won't have to do what they have in Fairbanks. It began small, but now a major part of their staff up there is the maintenance staff of the dorm. The students evidently don't do that much, aren't even allowed to clean up because the unions have control of the cleanup. And, you know, that's a little ridiculous, but we can work it differently down here. To subsidize it, I would say no, not when there's other short, immediate ways of doing it. Last person, Roberta? Roberta? Green? Oh, Robert, I'm sorry, hi. You're most welcome. Is that Gears, Robert Gears?
Gertz.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm Robert Gertz. I'm in the diesel automotive section of the ACC Community College. And the reason I came over is we've been talking a little bit in the last couple weeks over there about the increase in the increment so that we can expand the diesel program. And it seems like if we don't come over and say something positive, there's the possibility it may get laid by the wayside. Right now, the diesel course is sharing facilities with the automotive course. It's in a small area behind the automotive course. There are 21 students in it. They're in a cramped situation, and because they're taking part of the automotive mechanics course area, the automotive mechanics course doesn't have the facilities to expand or go to their full potential, and the diesel doesn't have the facilities to expand and go to their full potential. They both try to do the best that they can what they have, but they could both expand and become better situated to meet the needs of Alaska for more diesel and automotive mechanics. What they're asking for is enough money to move the diesel facilities to a leased building, to hire an additional staff person, and I believe somebody for the tool room and clerical staff. And what would happen is, instead of only having 21 students a year in the diesel program, they could have up to 35 students. That'd be an increase in 14 students. And the automotive section would be able to increase 10 to 15 students per year. Most likely, you probably have the component in decision increase statement that gives all the facts and figures on that. All I can say is that most of the students over there, if not all of them, favor it. They'd all be here, but most of them also work after school. And so I took it upon myself. Some of the other students encouraged me to come over and plead for this. We also support housing and student loans and things like that, but we're also looking at the possibility that once we're out in the field, we'd like to be able to come back to a facility that is a little better equipped and facilitated than what we have over there now.
I don't see that listed right here now, Bob, but this is a short form, so I don't have the long form, the thick books. It may be in that,
right.
It's just in general categories.
Well, what they were asking for, I believe, is in the tune of $100,185, and that's for $36,000 for staff, $47,000 for equipment, $12,000 for commodities, $2,000 for contractual services, and $3,000 for travel. And what that would do is increase the student population over there from the present 21 in diesel to about 35 in diesel, from the present 40 in auto to about 60 in auto.
All right. Good. At least it's on my mind more than
okay.
Other things are.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to give testimony we haven't given an opportunity to? Well, I thank you all very much for coming out. I appreciate your point of view, and hopefully we can get this thing solved step by step, but don't let up on the drums. Get that housing going.